This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free.
Lynn Thompson with Living on Purpose, and I'm in conversation with Dr. Larry Smith here in Parksville. Hi, Larry.
Nice to see you.
We've come together to talk about your book, Embracing the Journey of Recovery from Tragedy to Triumph. When was this book published?
It was June 2007 through Morgan James Publishing in New York.
You had a pivotal experience in your life. Let's just jump back a year ago to the Ironman event that was in Penticton.
Actually, almost a year ago today. It was August of 2006, and I just watched a lot of my friends going through the same process 2 days ago. It's quite an exciting experience.
Is it something you'd do again?
Well, as a matter of fact, I just sent in my application for the 2008 Ironman, so hopefully I'll be in shortly.
It's good to have a bit of a break maybe and just gear up. I mean, it's not just a physical thing to do, is it?
Absolutely. You need time to recover physically, mentally, emotionally. And it's like we're talking about in the book, it's a mind-body-spirit approach. And the Ironman is much like someone recovering from a life-threatening illness. You need a team, you need coaches, you need health professionals, and you need to approach it with a clear picture in mind. What are your goals you're trying to accomplish? And try not to get too stressed and too serious about it. You know, lighten up. You know, life is short. You know, enjoy it and have a good time. And that's what I plan on doing again this time around.
Yeah, and celebrate the fact that you're able and willing to take on such a challenge. Not everyone would be willing to focus their life because it would take some time to do that. And also, you had a particular goal, speaking of goals, with this last year. You did it as a fundraiser. And is that a common thing?
There's a thing in the Ironman called the Community Fund. They're raising money for various community projects, and as well they have their own pet project or cause that they're working for. In my case, it was for chemical dependency, and I did it for the Edgewood Foundation, which of course is associated with the Edgewood Treatment Center in Nanaimo. And I was very proud to be able to raise funds for them because they do such a great job.
What is your association with the Edgewood facility?
Well, you might say that I'm a graduate of there. I went through the recovery process myself back in 1999. It was a long haul to recover from addiction. I say I'm very proud to have gone through there and to recover and be able to give back, because it's all about giving back. When someone gives you back your life, I feel obligated and I'm more than happy to help others in the recovery process.
So you have a very personal connection and obviously commend that facility for that kind of treatment that you received.
Yes, absolutely. It's a love-hate relationship too, because when you're going through something like that, there are a lot of people you butt heads with, don't get along with, but they're the same type of people that are helping you. I had a conflict. I was about ready to leave. The tough love concept. If you're watching a person basically screw up, their life isn't going well, they're physically ill, their relationships are suffering, and if you don't say anything, you're not going to help them by saying it's okay, it's something else, it's your stressful job, it's your partner. This isn't helpful at all. People who don't have some type of intervention or somebody in their face to tell them, hey, you're not doing well, I love you, but you're not doing well, you need some help, you need to get that help, we're not going to let you do this. I think if you mean business, most will go along with it. Ultimately, the person does have to choose, because if they want to choose to go in the path of self-destruction, they will. No one can stop them that way, but I think we need to be more upfront and more in your face. And for me, that was a tough thing, because I was on my own and I didn't have anybody to be accountable to.
The isolation factor, right?
Yes, that's one of the stumbling blocks to a lot of people in recovery. Isolation. Even if you think you're doing okay, maybe you're not. You need peers. People are going through the same thing as you. For myself, the blocks I had was isolating, not sharing my feelings, and not asking for help. Those are the three things that keep coming up. I still have to work on them. That's another one of the things I'm doing on the interview today, is to talk about it. You know, what it was like, what happened, what I'm doing now. I can honestly say that I'm not isolating. I'm asking for help when I need to. I'm definitely sharing my feelings. And that's something I think people not in recovery need to do. I think the tremendous advantage of being in recovery is you have people around you to encourage you to keep on sharing.
A lot of us tend to sort of put some of those things off day to day, just thinking, well, some other time. And then when you get an opportunity to share, you realize, wow, this feels kind of healthy. This is something I could be doing more often. And maybe it's better to do that as a regular routine rather than waiting till a crisis and then needing to have more of a recovery time.
again, you hit the nail on the head, because I see this being a health professional. People keep saying to me, "Oh, I know I should come in more often. I'm really sore, and you told me I should be stretching, and life got busy." And that's what happens. So, you know, there was an old commercial, I think, with a mechanic car breaking down, and it says, "Well, you can pay me now or pay me later." And it's a lot more expensive, not only in money, but pay later, but you get sick. You have to be vigilant with it. You need to make appointments for yourself, medical-wise, and you also need to look after your mind, body, spirit.
Speaking of asking for help, that comes out as one of your chapters in the book.
Asking for help, and the two ways you can approach that is help yourself or help others. And the example in the book, Joan, who was recovering from breast cancer, she basically did all the giving. She was a registered nurse, looking after people all day long, and then she went home and put the mother and wife hat on, and she's looking after everybody there. So when she had breast cancer, had a mastectomy, and was in recovery, she decided, hey, I need to look after me. I really do need to look after me. And that's something that she was vigilant about. She says, the other people can wait, because I've been looking after everybody my whole life. That's one approach. And the other approach of the character in the book, whose name is Donnie, he was on his own. He didn't have any dependents. Working, getting back into it full time, he thought, I should be out helping others, because if I'm helping others, I'm actually helping myself. He would chair his AA group, and he also went to a few detox meetings and to a meeting at the local prison. And that helped him immensely in his recovery bit, because he could see how deadly the disease was. It was killing people, even people well-intentioned. If they didn't follow through the program, they're either back in jail or they're dead. And that's the whole serious part. It's not maybe if it's going to get you. The disease will get you, and you'll be dead or worse, meaning you're suffering out there.
You're referring to addiction as a disease. Addiction is seen by some people in society as a choice rather than something like cancer, for example.
Yeah, I think if we can break that question down into is a personal responsibility, people are not responsible for the fact that they are addicted and that they have the disease of addiction, which is what I'm going to call it, whether people agree or not, but they do have 100% responsibility in their recovery. No one else can do it for them. So in that way, we're not putting over the responsibility, oh, I have a disease, poor me. This is wrong. You've got it. We don't know how you got it. You got it. What are you going to do about it? So I think if we look at it that way, we can agree that the person who's suffering, be it from cancer or from addiction or getting run over by a car, it wasn't their fault either. They're 100% responsible for their recovery. As far as it being a disease or not, you know, we're not going to go over that debate in an hour here. I think it is. Some will agree with me and some won't. A lot of people there are dying from it.
As a health professional, then, you definitely advocate people being proactive in their health and wellness.
That's another absolutely answer. If you're going to come in to see me as a professional in my practice, you'll be expected to do some follow-up exercises. You know, what can you do to get strong? Because a lot of questions, Doc, what can I do so this doesn't come back again? Well, I'm glad you asked, because here's what you can do. There's no reason why you can't be doing any of these things. I don't buy the time reason. I don't buy the money reason. I don't know how to do it. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you, or I'll get you somebody who will do it. Yeah, people have to be proactive. They have to make choices. We just don't want them depending on one opinion from, in this example, use a primary care physician who may not be the best person. You're asking them. You should be asking a lot of other people as well, no matter what the condition.
In your experience, Larry, what were the warning signs that you ignored as things progressed in your personal circumstance?
I think it's more of a denial, because I looked at the things that I still could do. I could still work full time. I could still run marathons, believe it or not. Meanwhile, the relationships were suffering. I would isolate because I didn't want people to find out my secret. Just a lot of strange behavior and, you know, things like you getting these little minor car accidents, not paying attention, getting sick all the time, getting pneumonia, things like that. And of course, I think I knew what the reason was. My body was so run down, but, you know, I dare not tell anybody else because then they'll find out what the real reason is. So I think in my case, there was just a lot of denial. You know, how can I be? I'd be like the people on Maine and Hastings, and I wasn't. Those were the warning signs that I ignored. And I don't want to see other people do the same thing. Because once you get in treatment, the old saying is you can't bullshit a bullshitter.
Even in your book, you acknowledge that when people think that they're doing okay and they are on track and they've come through the recovery, that they can still fool themselves. They can still not be sure. So what would be the ways that people can keep tabs on that? I mean, besides keeping in touch with communicating their feelings as need be, but...
Eventually, you're going to be faced with a challenge, an ultimate challenge. You're going along okay, you're healthy, you're happy, you're doing the mind, body, spirit thing, things are going great, but some crisis will come, you know, maybe two of your family members die, or maybe you're into a car accident, or in the case of the character in the book, Donnie, he had to go through a, you know, an appearance in court with a sexual abuse case, and it was highly stressful for him. Something like that, it's not it could happen, it will happen. That's basically how you know how well you're doing in recovery, because facing those challenges, you use all your resources or you're not going to do very well. So I think it's a matter of going along, you're feeling good, don't be complacent. Something's going to happen and you better know how to deal with it. And the Ironman, I talked to a 10-time world champion, Paula Newby Fraser, and she couldn't overstress the same thing was, is you've trained for it, you're ready for it. There's going to be times out there in the day, it's hot, you're tired, you're not doing well, and you're just so despondent. How are you going to deal with it? That example there, it's the same thing as being in recovery. What are you going to do when things go bad? You haven't been putting money in the bank by going to meetings, getting help, but looking after your body physically, you will be in trouble.
What about self-talk?
Very powerful. In fact, it's something I do every morning. There's one favorite line I remember from one of my mentors, Dr. John DeMartini, who's a chiropractor and a philosopher. Keep on saying, I'm a genius and I apply my wisdom.
That's all-encompassing, isn't it? Yeah. I like to start the day giving thanks. And actually, that's how I end my day, too, is just giving thanks. And gratitude is a chapter in your book as well.
It's my favorite chapter, gratitude, because we can be having all sorts of terrible things happen in the day, but if I look at my day today, I felt rushed, I felt stressed, but when I sat down for 5 minutes and had a chance to reflect, I counted 20 things that I was grateful for. I'm here talking to you about recovery. I'm in a nice house. I've got my stomach full of food. I'm going back to a career I like, going away for a nice little romantic evening. Things are going fine. So what was it that I was stressed about? It was nothing. Even in the deepest, darkest days for the character Donnie in his recovery, you know, he's not doing very well. He's, you know, can't control his bladder. He, basically, people are all laughing at him. They made him fine. What was the one thing that happened to you that you're grateful for? And it was somebody befriended him and said, hey, I know what you're feeling like. I was like that too. Do you know, just hang on. He says, I'll be your friend. He says, never mind about those other people. I'm your buddy. And he thought, hey, this is something to be grateful for. And he hung on to that. And the next day, he found another thing to hang on to. Pretty soon, you find things that you're going to be grateful for.
Yeah, and in terms, Larry, of what you were saying about helping others, we never know the powerful effect that small words and gestures can have on other people. And just making the time to smile or say hi to someone can turn their lives around. And I think it's really important to keep that in mind and not just think that nobody cares or nobody's noticing us. It's up to us to let other people know we're noticing them, right?
That's what I do in my job all day long. Sometimes you don't have to say much. A little pat on the shoulder says, you're doing okay. No, just keep at it. You're going to be fine. And then I say, I really mean it. If I go back to, this is the Iron Man again, too. There was times there last year when I was not doing well and people were clapping, going, you're doing great. I'm going, what do you mean? I feel terrible. I look terrible. But I kept on hearing it. I'm going, well, I guess they must be right. So I'm going to start running again. You can never be too kind.
Hearing that kind of input from outside can help meet your self-talk. I hear somebody talking about themselves in a way that's self-deprecating, and I've actually said to them, I'm not comfortable hearing you talk about yourself like that in my presence. And that's quite a powerful thing to say. Not everybody can say that or hear that because they're used to a certain relationship with themselves that keeps them below their potential for whatever reason.
I think it's habit. Negative self-talk, and again, dealing with isolation, if you have nobody around to give you feedback, you're going to keep talking negative. Versus if you have somebody saying, what you said is just excellent feedback, they're going to go, hey, you know, you're right.
There is a purpose through what you've been experiencing and what you've been expressing through your book. What is, to you, the highest purpose of your experience so far in your life, Larry? In terms of effect, an event or a practice, you know, that type of thing. If you look at the effect therein, you can often find the purpose.
I would go with the phrase, you don't have to do it alone. Because at some point in your life, you're going to be faced with a life-threatening illness or one of your family members or your loved ones is going to be going through a very, very tough time. you'll be despondent, you'll be angry, you'll be crying. Why me? Why us? Look at the news. I don't have to tell you, you know, what's on out there. But you definitely don't have to do it alone. And I think that's the joy for me, is to find out in the deepest, darkest moments, it's not what people said, as they were around me and I felt the love. It was the feeling for me was follow the lights, go to the energy. Mm-hmm. From people being around there, says, you're going to be okay. And I believed them. There was that faith that I was going to be okay. Somehow we're going to get through this. That is where the healing takes place. And I think that means a lot more than billions of dollars being poured into the healthcare system and we need more MRIs, we need more of this. And quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of hearing it. Let's get down to the grassroots level and help each other. You don't have to do it alone. Work as a family, work as a unit. You can recover from anything. The power of the human spirit, it's absolutely magnificent. So that would be the whole point of the book here, is there is a way. And even if people aren't going to make it, you know, they have terminal cancer, some people don't make it. I have a woman coming in to see me. She's a close friend. 99% chance she won't be here by the end of the year. She's accepted it. She's living her life full of hope. She knows where she's going. She's got a faith in a higher power of God. And she's, how would I say, has such total acceptance and joy, as I'm so grateful for my life. If we can focus on that, face it, we're all going to die. But she's at that point. She's inspirational to me. That's what I live for. And I just saw her the other day. And God bless her, my heart just rose and says, I wish that I could be like you. And here you are, you're dying and you have more joy than I do.
It has been said that people who have life-challenging situations or health conditions, they actually rise to the challenge of that, that they can then, as you say, express more joy and enthusiasm for life than those who maybe have had it so-called easier. That's odd, isn't it?
In a way, it's odd, but we have the easy, complacent life. You don't get challenged. There's not much joy in that. Which games do I remember the most? My football games and hockey games are the ones where we're losing. People we thought were going to lose. We've somehow found a way to win. We came through somehow. How did you do that? Is you got around with a group of people. Here's what we got to do. You work together as a unit, and you found a way to win. That's why I think sports are great, because you find that. You got the team spirit. You got somebody to help you. If you're faced in real life with that, you're going to do the same thing. As horrible as some of these life-threatening illnesses or things that happen are, ask many of them who have been through it, as they don't regret it at all, is because it's actually a gift. You don't think it's a gift at a time when you lost your leg from a car accident, but some people years later you ask them, they say, that's the best thing that ever happened to me. It blows my mind away.
That's often what you hear people say, and that cancer saved their lives. Or it sounds like from where you're looking at your life today and having produced this book with the purpose of helping people help themselves as well as understand that it's okay. I mean, here you are, you're a person in the community and you're revealing a part of yourself that, as you say, in the past you've wanted to hide. How are your colleagues receiving you with this turn of your life?
Basically, it's tremendous support. People are very happy that I'm doing well. They were very unhappy when I wasn't doing well, and also that I'm having the courage to come out and speak about it. It's been very difficult for me. I'm not an outgoing person. I'm a private person. But I think in this case here, this is something to share. Why should I keep this to myself? Because there are other people out there suffering, and as soon as I tell the story, people immediately say, well, I've got a daughter like that, or I wish my husband would do this, or I wish my wife could get help. What did you do? You know, it was terrible what you went through, but, you know, what can we do? They start to share with me, and that's where, you know, it really turns me on to see, okay, well, here's what you can do. There's all sorts of things.
And as you say, Larry, that is the gift, is that when we take the chance to make ourselves more vulnerable, we're more real to people, and they can be more real with us. It is quite moving.
Yeah, and I use the term from my friend Cindy. She often said, people get physically naked first before they're emotionally naked. If we're emotionally naked, you find out we're all the same. Mm-hmm. We all have fear. We all can be afraid. We all can be angry. We all can be happy. There's really not much difference when you break it down. I was so afraid, what will people think? Because it's drilled in from society, the norms that are out there. You know, what will people think? Well, they'll think what they think. Mm-hmm. Even after I do this, you know, some won't like it, some will. But here's who I really am. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm trying to say. We're all the same.
Final thoughts and a website contact for you, Larry Smith.
EmbracingTheJourneyBook.com. The book is available in hardcover. It's also available as an ebook. Plus, also, if you sign up, there are many, many recovery articles and videos. It doesn't cost you anything for that. I can be reached best ways by email, drlarr@shaw.ca. That's drlarr@shaw.ca. If you have any questions or concerns, I'd be more than happy to answer them. I'm glad you came over today because it's fun talking about recovery. It's fun talking about life. It gives me hope. It gives me inspiration. I think I'm going to have a great afternoon because of it. I feel energized. So I hope I can give some of my energy to people who really need it out there.
Thanks, Larry. I really appreciate that we had the time to talk. And yeah, you seem more relaxed and more in the moment. So that was a nice transformation for me to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much.